All right, everybody, welcome back. I am Bryce. It's really, really been an exciting, exciting summit, and we've got another great guest, Austin Barak, founder of Relayer Capital, which is an incredible crypto hedge fund. Austin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me here, Bryce. I think the last time we chatted was one of the most fun conversations that I've had in these sorts of settings. So I'm excited to kind of dig into some of the interesting things happening in the market today. But yeah, doing well. It's markets are creating lots of opportunities.
Yeah, no doubt. And I appreciate that. And as a full disclosure to everybody watching, I'm an investor, or sorry, our hedge fund Tower 18 is invested in Relayer Capital. And Austin's one of our favorite managers that we have backed. And it's just been incredible to see, you know, your growth. We were talking kind of before we got on here, just catching up, and all the different learnings that, again, even as a professional, we're still continuing to refine our trading strategies and refine, you know, our risk management, all that kind of stuff. And so I want this conversation to be wide ranging. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your background, your history, kind of becoming such a, you know, a force, a titan in the crypto industry, a little bit about your learnings. But I really do want to focus a lot of the conversation on what's hot now, where's the market going, you know, narratives, metas, that whole thing. And we'll just kind of go back and forth. But yeah, Austin, tell the good citizens here at Crypt Nation who are tuning in, meeting you for the first time, a little bit about who you are, just high level.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, obviously, for the really nice compliment on the investor side, and also for calling me a titan. That's very generous. But I aspire to be that sort of, you know, titan in the hedge fund world and in crypto broadly. But yeah, to tell you a little bit about myself, started Relayer Capital about a year and a half ago. Prior to that, I was a partner at CoinFund, where I invested across early stage liquid and venture strategies. Was at CoinFund for 4 years, really from the early days, helping them scale up under, you know, Jake and Alex and Seth. Prior to that, I led strategy at 21 Shares, the crypto ETF issuer, which has some really interesting crossovers now that we're seeing so many ETFs come to market, having that perspective. And then before that, started a borrow-lend protocol in the early days of DeFi, and then was an early employee at a cross-border payments company called Payoneer that, you know, was fortunate enough to be a part of and kind of lead certain divisions there as it scaled from a small startup to a NASDAQ publicly listed company.
Epic. And so you've been all every different spectrum of crypto investor, from the liquid side to the illiquid side to working in the industry. Why did you even decide to come into crypto originally? You know, you crypto was born, you know, in 2008. Many people didn't even see it as an industry. Kind of when did you get in, and what was the pull factor?
Yeah, so it's kind of like there's a lot of pieces that pulled me in at different times. Just as a background for all of this, had a unique upbringing. I started trading when I was 10 years old, started investing. Literally would get like the Wall Street Journal. It's a little, not to age myself, but it was a little while ago. So I used to get the Wall Street Journal delivered and read that in the morning before the markets open, and then look through 10Qs and Ks. And then began trading options when I was 16. So really, really was fascinating by the idea that you can find these unique opportunities and kind of scenario or situations where you can see something that the rest of the market doesn't. And there's, you know, an opportunity to kind of be ahead of that and get in the weeds on interesting growth technology companies. So I was investing in like ExxonMobil or utilities. I was investing in solar energy and biotech, in emerging tech. And, you know, I ended up going to college to study finance, did some banking and trading internships, realized that that was kind of not what I wanted to really pursue. I found it not super interesting. So I went to work in cross-border payments because I was really more attracted to the technology side of things. So when I came across crypto, it was this awesome combination of early stage tech and just fascinating things that were being built with the ability to express views and invest in, you know, a public permissionless setting. So that's kind of what drew me in over time. I first came across Bitcoin actually in 2013. My brother was invited to a poker game where the buy-in was with Bitcoin. And at that point, Bitcoin was $40.
Wow.
And yeah,
I would have liked to win that pot.
so he ended up winning that game.
Wow.
And then he calls me afterwards and is like, "So how do I receive this? How do I set it up?" So we kind of dug into the weeds together. I was just starting my job at the payments company, and I followed Bitcoin tangentially, but it came across Ethereum in 2016, and that's what really captured my imagination. This platform and protocol for programmable money on the internet, and a new form of kind of trustless communication. So got really in the weeds in 16 and 17, and then in 2018, early 2018, in like a true first cycle fashion, decided to leave my job to go full time just as the markets were peaking.
Yep, that's classic.
But yeah, it was it's been a lot of different things pulling me into the industry over time, but I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
If you have been considering futures trading, now might be the time to take a closer look. The futures market has seen increased activity recently, and Plus500 Futures offers a straightforward entry point. The platform provides access to major instruments, including the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, natural gas, and other key markets across equity indices like energy, metals, forex, and crypto. Their interface is designed for accessibility. You can monitor and execute trades from your phone with a $100 minimum deposit. Once your account is open, potential trades can be executed in two clicks. For those who prefer to practice first, Plus500 offers an unlimited demo account with full charting and analytical tools. No risk involved while you familiarize yourself with the platform. The company has been operating in the trading space for over 20 years. Download the Plus500 app today. Trading in futures involves a risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? And credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With Gemini Credit Card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight into your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, or you're a faithful listener of the Crypto 101 podcast and love Bitcoin and other cryptos, visit the Gemini credit card website so it's easy for you to earn even more Bitcoin or crypto with their credit card. Again, visit Gemini.com/card today to learn more. Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, and there's so many interesting, cool aspects of it. And you mentioned Ethereum was really the thing that like got you hooked, got you in. You realized the programmability of this. And I think what's so interesting, and when people ask me, what do you think is going to be the biggest sector, the biggest narrative, or whatever, I'm still hooked on DeFi. I still think because finance touches every industry. And so, no matter what industry you're in, you're going to need financing or you're going to need money. And so, to me, DeFi is still the end all be all. But I know a lot of people are still saying, are starting to say AI is going to, crypto and AI. How do you kind of pair the two? And even if you just like from a portfolio management standpoint, like, do you think, okay, I want half the fund in DeFi, a quarter of the fund in AI? And how do you kind of pair all that in your portfolio management too?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. And I take a very fundamentals thesis-driven approach in investing. So I invest heavily across DeFi, decentralized physical infrastructure, so DePIN, crypto meets AI crossover, broadly scalable infrastructure. But things evolve really quickly. So you kind of have to be nimble. And that's one of the benefits of liquid investing, where you have the opportunity. And I invest in venture as well and take that even longer view. But in liquid, you can buy and sell assets, you can be nimble. So it really depends on where the opportunities I see in the market are. Right now, I think the biggest opportunities are in DeFi. We've had a little bit of a run-up recently where, with a lot of these digital asset treasury deals, there's kind of like shiny objects in every single direction. And DeFi had done really well in April, May, some of June as the market was recovering. But as we got into that next stage of market excitement, there was what I like to call shiny object chasing. But the fundamentals on DeFi have only continued to improve. And I think that next leg up is going to be driven there. And the really nice thing about DeFi is, as you were saying, it's like at the end of the day, it's just a better accounting ledger is what blockchains are. So it's a better way to make and receive and send payments. It's a better way to kind of disintermediate and expand upon the products that you would get from traditional entities like banks. So I'm a really big fan of borrow-lend protocols. Maple in particular, Euler, Fluid, Aave, Kamino, and others, because they just have a really incredible amount of user and activity stickiness. Where and that's one of the things that like you often like hear people say that like, oh, well, the reason that TVL is so high on Ethereum versus Solana, even though DEX volume is so much higher, is because TVL is a lagging indicator because it's stickier. But like, if it's stickier, let's really think about that. And is that a huge opportunity for these sorts of protocols? Because it's not as easy to unwind positions where you collateralized an asset to borrow against it and you kind of built up your position from there, or you're doing a leveraged loop on another particular asset. So what I'm looking at right now are these protocols that have real stickiness on from their customers, but are also generating lots of revenue and finding product market fit. And right now, borrow lends have found the most, the highest take rate and the best revenue capture. Syrup, for example, this is Maple Finance's token. They were doing $4 million of annualized revenue in March, and now they're doing $20 million of annualized revenue a couple months later. They had about $500 million of assets under management. Now they're 3.2 billion. And we can get more into the
It's been a
mechanics of why.
rocket ship ride.
Yeah, it's a rocket ship. And we can get more into the mechanics of why they've done really well and why some of the others have done well. But that's one component that I'm really excited about. Also, I think DEX is beyond Uniswap, because Uniswap has been like the gorilla in the room for a long time. There's a lot of interesting things that are happening there in emerging ecosystems.
Yeah, those are all great names that you named. I think every single coin that you listed off, I think I have exposure to in our fund as well. So,
I realized, by the way, I actually only answered like half of your question. One of the other things, because you were saying like, how do I think about portfolio construction?
right.
I definitely want to be nimble, but I also think about it very much in what's the maximum exposure that I feel comfortable having for a particular sector of the market. And for certain sectors, they're more mature than others and a little bit further along the adoption arc. And I think you can feel comfortable with a higher concentration
Like
because
DeFi, for example, because there's real cash
exactly.
flows that are backing it.
Yeah, exactly. So when you look at different verticals, I typically I'm comfortable having it go up to 50% of the portfolio, but not above there. DeFi, I'm comfortable seeing it go as high as 75%. But then I also have individual position limits. And the reason for this is, as much as you try and be a long-term investor, and I mean, that's the lens through which I look at everything, often in market euphoria, prices move way further than fundamentals. And because you're a liquid investor, you have the opportunity to rebalance your portfolio and be prudent and take profits. And I think, and there's a whole bunch of different rules that I've put in place, but I think this sort of structure allows you to both continue to have exposure in the areas that you're most excited about, but also be prudent around where you take profits and make sure that you don't have too much exposure to one name where it goes all the way up and then, you can, see it round trip.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of my big lessons learned is exactly that. Like, take profits when the market allows it, especially in crypto, because you need to understand, like, trading crypto, especially when you're far out the risk curve trading some of these smaller cap assets, like on an annualized basis, they have like 200% volatility or 300% volatility, meaning it could go up, you know, expected, you know, 100 times, or it could go down 99% or whatever. It's like, it's such a wide range of outcomes, whereas like the S&P 500 is like a 15% annualized volatility. So it's like the range of expected outcomes are really small. So it's like, that's much more fit, like S&P, like long-term investing, don't trade around those positions. Like, you kind of have a greater understanding of, and clarity of like the path for that asset. Whereas like with crypto, that wide range, it basically just means there's so many unknowns. And so when you do have the opportunity to sell when the price is, you know, 200 or 300% above its 200-day moving average, it's like, that is like a key point to you know, take profits or whatever, or any sort of you know, metric. But I love what you say is like, that's the like, that's kind of like the exorbitant privilege of being a liquid crypto investor, is like, you could actually, you know, take it, you know, capitalize on the markets. Whereas like a lot of these folks who are doing you know, long venture lockups and stuff, it's like they could see the market go up and they're still locked up for, you know, 3 years or whatever it is, and can't capitalize. So what other lessons from the bear market and the bull market of the past that you kind of have, like, what other lessons are like super applicable to today's market environment?
Yeah. And by the way, I should have said this at the beginning, but caveat to everything I've said, and we'll say not financial advice, my personal views, not the views of my fund.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of learning lessons. One, you know, thinking about like these discrete buckets and these discrete sizing. Another, and I think this is an edge that you can have when you're small, and when you're like an emerging manager versus if you're like already a billion plus in AUM, is the alpha in the market is to be early and to take advantage of low liquidity. Like you need to understand where the real opportunities are. And I think, and also of course have a differentiated view that the market doesn't yet get, and get really in the weeds and on kind of getting to that thesis. But I think that's a unique part of crypto markets versus public equity markets, where smaller investors actually have an advantage to larger investors, where if you're, you know, let's say putting in a $5,000 order, you're not going to move the price much. But say you're a $500 million fund and you want to buy 5% of the asset, that's $25 million. And if the asset itself is $50 million, like the numbers don't work. You would
Yeah.
just move the price too much. So I think having these high conviction views, but also not really worrying if, all right, well, now the liquidity isn't super high, doesn't have a lot of exchange listings. Like, that's the opportunity to get in ahead of when the liquidity comes. So really leaning into that. And then another one is on at least the risk side of things, there's a lot of signals that are the same across cycles. And then there's a lot of signals that rhyme. And there's going to always be a reason to say, like, this time is different. So you can't try and have everything match, because you're going to say like, oh, well, Coinbase needs to be the number one app in the app rankings, and that didn't happen. But then we still, you know, had a big pullback after, you know, the inauguration in January. So I think like there's a couple indicators that I found to be really high signal. So one is just like longer time frame fear and greed index. This is pretty basic, but literally every time it gets into extreme greed, which is above 80, and then falls below there, it's always been a good time to sell. And if it goes below 20, it's always been a good time to buy. And I'm not saying it's like on a 1 hour, 1 day, or 1 week time frame, but on a medium term and often a short term time horizon, there's a lot of signal in that. And then you can look at like how elevated are, you know, borrow rates on chain for like the demand for capital. Where is open interest? So how much leverage is there in the system? What are funding rates? So kind of a reflection of derivatives activity. You know, what's the relative market cap changes of different assets over time? You know, a lot of other things like this. And you know, I have a laundry list. Another one, and you can actually think about it across different cycles, not even just crypto. The pace of asset creation. So, like, how many new tokens are being created in a given period of time. And that's something we saw with AI. It's like in December and January of December of last year and January of early this year, there was just an insane pace of new asset creation. And kind of conversely, if you see really emerging signs, but you don't quite see the fundamentals there yet, are you early or is there not product market yet? So I know I'm kind of like touching on a bunch of different topics,
It gives a
but
lot of people,
things
or
are on
gives
track.
people a lot of ammo to kind of go, pause, maybe watch the recording or whatever, rewind it, and kind of get a couple ideas in their mind. Like the fear and greed index, I loved what you said about it, is like, to me, it's almost like an RSI or like some kind of momentum indicator. It's like when you hit the top, sort of the top of that upper bound, people think, oh, it's overbought, it's good time to sell. But that's oftentimes when the most momentum is there. It's about when it exits that overbought,
Exactly.
right?
You
And
don't want to, or yeah, it's like when it just enters there, it could be there for a while and you can
yeah.
see the craziest part of the run.
Bingo. Yeah. And people always just, start shorting right when something gets overbought. I'm like, that's when momentum's the strongest. You want to see that strong momentum start to wane and go back down. So that's a really good sort of call out with what a lot of people kind of miss, have misconceptions about with
Yeah, and one
technical.
other thing that I've learned that's pretty interesting is like the different role that Bitcoin has in the ecosystem than it's had traditionally, where in the past, when there were large kind of market pullbacks, you'd see Bitcoin go down 70, 80% and not quite as much as alts, but it would still go down a lot. Now, because there's so many broader based forms of inflows, whether it's from like a MicroStrategy or ETF or sovereigns or otherwise, it's kind of decoupled from the rest of crypto. And we saw that earlier this year where it didn't have the drawdown. It went down like 30% when everything went down a lot more and actually held up well and was up before you knew it. So I think it kind of creates this different paradigm where now it's a lot easier to think about. And this could always change tomorrow
Of
and
course.
recouples and kind of sees that sort of downside. But there's an opportunity like as you reach or like as you're moving out of the extreme greed area, just like as an example with one indicator, you don't necessarily need to think about it in a discrete binary way where it's like, all right, I should move half of my portfolio from alts into cash. You can actually feel pretty comfortable de-risking into Bitcoin, where it's like, all right, well, maybe I'm not going to have the same magnitude of upside from that point on, but the volatility of my portfolio will be dampened, and you'll still be able to participate in some upside because you've just swapped the alt exposure for Bitcoin exposure that has like different, more persistent capital flows.
Yeah, no, it's really, a good point. There's like, I was just looking at the this big breakout in Ethereum ETF inflows just before we hopped on, and on Bitcoin has this, sort of big, huge inflow, whether it's MicroStrategy and all these corporates and these massive ETFs. The most successful ETF ever has been the Bitcoin ETF, and just this morning, the Ethereum ETF has been now has eclipsed $10 billion or something in assets under management for the
Wow.
BlackRock one. Was that it? And it was like the fastest to 10 billion ever.
I don't know if it was the fastest to 10 billion. I think that was still the Bitcoin one. But
Maybe the
yeah, it's
third
really nice
fastest.
to see those flows. And I think it's because the first time Ethereum right now has price insensitive buyers, where they were previously buyers on fundamental, where now you have these digital asset treasury vehicle like Tom Lee's one, like BitMine and Joe Lubin's one, Sharpe. The S-bet, where now they're just trying to accumulate as much Ethereum as possible, regardless of price. And that's a new dynamic and something that I think before long we'll see with Solana as well as the next candidate for that price insensitive buyer.
Yeah, and once we get staking yield basically into the ETFs, which I know a lot of these different I think BlackRock actually just recently refiled their Ethereum ETF to include that native staking yield. That'll just blow the doors open off of it. It's just a completely new product. And hopefully Solana gets an ETF with staking spot. Any insights there? Do you think the ball is going to be breaking one way or another over the course of this year?
Yeah, I mean, it seems likely that it'll get full ETF and staking ETF approval at some point this year. I don't have like any insight beyond just like the chatter that you hear and whatever's published by the ETF experts. There's the two guys that everyone follows, and that's the source of information. The Bloomberg
Bloomberg
guys, exactly. But that's actually an area that I'm really excited about. Solana liquid staking and staking protocols. Jito, of course, is the 800-pound gorilla in liquid staking, but in particular, I'm a big fan of Sanctum, which has it both has the has its own liquid staking product called Infinity, but also has another product that it allows any validator to create their own liquid staking token. So, Binance and Bybit, for example, created ones like that using Sanctum's infrastructure. MoonPay just announced one today. DFDV, the treasury company, as an accretive way to bring value to their shareholders, they actually spun up a validator and created a liquid staking token on Sanctum stack called DFDV Sol. And then, Marinade being another one that is doing a really great job on not even just the liquid staking, although that's growing, but on the native direct staking with integrations with BitGo and others. But they have these really nice token tailwind where 40% of the revenue from the token is actually going back to buy is going to buying back the token.
That's Marinade.
That's Marinade. And right now, the value of buybacks versus the market cap of the token is essentially 15% of the token would be bought back every year with how
Wow.
much is going to buybacks versus the market cap. So, like, really, really nice tailwind in terms of just the amount of revenue they're generating and where that's going.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I've got positions in for the funds in Jito and Marinade. Marinade's a much smaller position. That number might be going up actually now. It's a
Yeah,
new
Marinade, by the way, is very cool as well. And they just released a new protocol called BAM to improve how you order transactions in Solana. So very much a fan of them as well. But I like to lean into these, smaller cap opportunities that are a little more, under the radar. And I mean, sometimes they take longer to play out.
Yeah, I mean they're high beta, right? So in the market,
Yeah.
when the market's going up, they're going to go up stronger and faster and harder. And when the market's going down, they end up, losing value quicker. Where I think a lot of people who are watching, they're like, man, like if I could just spend a day with Austin over his shoulder, seeing how he's finding these opportunities, it'd be invaluable. So can you give us kind of the a little bit of the spiel of, how do you find these opportunities? What tools are you using? Like, are there sites that you're frequenting? Are there forums that people could kind of join and learn more, or like what's your like overall sort of research process look like?
Yeah, so it's kind of
Mosaic
like,
theory is how I describe mine, by the
oh, I really like that term. I may copy that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like data from a fire hose. And there's a lot of different sources. So one, just constantly tracking all of the different like major data platforms. So DeFi Llama is one. Dune Analytics is another, Blockworks, Artemis, Token Terminal. I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple.
Yeah,
Flipside.
Arcum,
Yeah,
Skew.
Arcum, exactly. So I'm looking through all of those and I do a combination of things. There's a universe of assets that I find in that I'm let's call I find interesting for XYZ reason. And I'm tracking their fundamentals on a regular basis. And then I have I call it like kind of surfing the web, where you're just scrolling through that and see like what pops out and what interesting trend is like where's their revenue growth or where's their TVL and then going down that rabbit hole. It's like, all right, well, why is this DEX volume up 10x? And it's like, all right, well, they took away or like purse platforms, like, all right, well, they took away fees or they're doing a points campaign. So maybe you can discount that. But then you start to filter through and it's like, all right, well, maybe there's new product market fit, and that's why something's happening. Spent a lot of time on Twitter, just reading tweets, articles, blog posts from people that I respect, and also kind of there's a lot of really smart analyst sleuths on Twitter, and trying to consume all of that.
And they're just doing free research for all of us
They're
hedge
doing free
fund
research,
managers.
yeah. And I do put together lists though because I follow 4,000 accounts. A
And there's a
lot
lot
of
of garbage.
Yeah, there's a lot. So I think I've distilled it to about like 150 accounts that I found to be most useful.
Nice.
And I have it broken out into different categories. What else? There's some, on-chain tools. So Mobi Screener, I think, is an incredible one. They've released a ton of really interesting products. So being able to determine whether an asset is trending, and the criteria that they use is really advanced wallet tracking. So if they say, like, well, token holders of a particular token are often early investors and successful in this vertical of the market, or if there's a particular investor and wallet holder that generally has a high win rate. So this is not a novel concept, but I think their algorithm around tracking which are the right wallets and where they provide the right signal gives very, very early trend indicators. And you can look at that across time frames. They recently rolled out a feature that just lets you look at who's doing a large DCA, something that's kind of a
Dollar
little bit.
cost average, like entry or exit from the market.
Yeah, exactly. So who's trying to put in a big order on chain, which is visible, say over like a day, and someone's trying to buy $1 million of a token and it's going up, but it's not clear why. And that takes a lot of technical work to set that up on your own, but they just provide that for you. So you can get like a real-time sense of where flows are going. So that's one that I like as well. And then another is just having a trusted group of fellow investors to
Yeah.
Brainstorm and share ideas, and being really open and honest and feeling comfortable saying, like, all right, well, maybe you see all the positives about this, but what about the negative XYZ, and kind of people to keep you honest in your research, because as a long biased investor, it's easier to get excited about positive catalysts than potential negative catalysts, but they're all important.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what do you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com. That's BLUEHOST.com to start now.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And one of the big ones, actually, I just pulled up Mobi Screener. Just it's something that I've heard about and looked at once or twice, but I'm gonna dive into it a little bit more and check out. But I see here at the top of their list is Pump. And full disclosure, our fund has some Pump. What do you think? That was one of the biggest ICOs. I think they sold out like 700 million or 500 million or something like that in 12 minutes. What do you think of the whole Pump? Pump.fun ICO and what that might mean for the future of crypto.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting in a couple ways. One, so they raised a ton of money and there was a lot of demand. So I think the number was, if I'm remembering right, 500 or 700 million on chain, but there was another couple hundred million on exchanges and otherwise. So I believe it was 1.3 billion total, which is an enormous amount of money to raise. And now they have this huge war chest of capital to iterate on the product. However, they went to market with their token at a unique time where they went from having 90% market share to actually no longer being the market leader, and Bonk capturing a lot of volume, where now Bonk has about two-thirds to one-third that Pump still has. So what it showed was, all right, maybe this segment of the market that Pump capture, it wasn't they didn't have necessarily like the stickiness that it seemed like they had this incredible moat that couldn't be surpassed. However, I definitely wouldn't discount moat to sorry, wouldn't discount Pump to capture back that volume. They've been doing They've been an incredible executor and really catalyzed this category for meme coin token launches in such a seamless way. Regardless, though, I don't think meme coin and speculative activity on chain is going anywhere. So, depending on where the market share lies, I think this category as a whole is only growing. And for now, it looks like Pump and Bonk are the two leaders, but we can definitely, and for a little period, there was Launchcoin, the Believe app that had gained some share. But I think it'll be really interesting to see it evolve. And Pump right now, they started to direct some of their revenue to token buybacks, like we've seen with other assets. Like I mentioned, Marinade, Hyperliquid has been really famous for this. But that's only just one tool, and they haven't, delivered their airdrop to early participants yet. They haven't rolled out any other sorts of incentives. There's a streaming product that's coming soon. So I think they definitely have a lot of cards up their sleeve. But yeah, Bonk is a much more formidable competitor than people were expecting, but there's definitely a lot of room for both of them.
Yeah, and I think Bonk, I love watching competition unfold in the free markets because they
Sure.
unveiled that product about a week before, Pump went live, and like it just had a big groundswell of support and money, and so it was perfectly timed. It was like, shooting an arrow right at the perfect piece of armor to kind of go right through, and it really did kind of kneecap Pump's momentum. So hopefully we'll see, things shake out positively, for both. But it's a PvP market still, so we'll see if it's winner take all or enough to share.
Yeah, and that's one of the nice things about crypto and things being on chain, where, like I was saying before about tracking data, Blockworks has an incredible dashboard where you can see the number of tokens launched, the number of tokens that graduate from bonding curves, the amount of volume, the amount of revenue. So you can literally watch market share gains and losses in real time. It's not like waiting for a quarterly report. So you can be first to market on seeing a trend change just by being on top of the data and following things closely.
Yeah, no, crypto investing really is the most like democratized and like low barrier to entry opportunity for anybody to kind of become like a millionaire with a very small amount of money. Like, not even saying that like what is it called? Like, hyperbolically, but like I know a lot of people who've become millionaires off like very, very small like initial investments because like the data's there. You just have to kind of roll up your sleeves and just dig in and like have some street smarts. Don't click on random links. Don't, buy if it's too good to be true. Good operational security measures and all that stuff, because keeping your crypto safe is just as important, if not more important, than like earning more crypto. Because
Of course.
I've just heard so many stories of people getting wiped out. But I want to tap you about a little bit in regards to the AI agent stuff, because I know you were really, really big into virtuals back in October, November, and like completely crushed this trend. And then in Q1, the whole trend kind of fell flat on its face. What happened there with that trend, and will we see a resurgence in AI agents?
Yeah, so 100% we'll see a resurgence in AI agents. That's just the direction that every industry is going. And like, I'm sure everyone sees these Salesforce commercials with Matthew McConaughey, where
Yeah.
he's like, had something bad happen, and Woody Harrelson's like, well, you should have had the Salesforce AI agent. So AI agents are just useful tools, period. I think one of the benefits of AI agents living on chain is the ability to interact with each other and have this permissionless environment for micropayments. So just like DPIN is really well suited to crypto rails because you have this payments infrastructure and also this like incentives rails, same thing applies for AI agents. What happened in Q4 and Q1 of this year is there was just too much market euphoria. It's like the example of like how many tens of thousands of agents were being created at one point in time, where there were some that are actually really useful, like AIXBT. But most of them didn't have a ton of functionality. And I think ultimately, when the rest of the market pulled back, it was just a higher beta, more correlated move down. However, I think we're continuing to see some really nice development in that category. So it's really just like, what are the protocols that have continued to build and are emerging from it? One of the ones that I think is pretty interesting, and it's there was a really great write-up, I think it was like 2 days ago on it, but it's called Ray Network, REI. And it's like a, you can think about it as like a token-driven AI research lab, like Anthropic or some of these others that is just public, and there's a token, and like, it's not available in any other format. And what they've done in, and it's fundamentally different than an LLM. It's kind of structured a little bit more like a human brain, the protocol that they're building, but it has a couple key differences versus an LLM. So like one is persistent memory and durable memory. So as you interact with an agent, the ability to learn from the experience that it's had with you and kind of build that over time versus every interaction being almost kind of insular to itself. Another really interesting component is how inference fine-tuning and training work in models. So in traditional LLMs, they don't really learn, and this ties in with memory a little bit, but like they don't necessarily learn from every interaction. They only learn in these discrete batches when you take these, because the model weights are fixed, right? So then you have to retrain the model and fine-tune the model separately, and then they improve over time. Whereas this can be done kind of more like a human brain and how a human brain learns in a constantly adaptive way, where it's like the fine-tuning happens at the same time as the inference. And then another piece is just this is all happening on crypto rails in the open. A lot of other pieces to this, they call the new memory type behavioral memory. Would definitely recommend looking at it. I'm still, like, to be fair, like completely honest, somewhat early in my research journey on this one, but this is one of the like more unique protocols that I've come across recently that's doing cool stuff.
And so this is, I was just pulling it up. Is it REI Network? I think it's like a $16 million market cap, or is it the REI like Rhea Search? REI Search.box. Is that the one? 160.
So that's the one. It's about 170 million FTV. Their Twitter handle is Ray Network, at Ray Network 0x.
Wow.
And it's Ray
Super cool.
Search, so like research with an I, dot box.
Love it. That's a hot tip. And yeah, I don't have any yet. So I'm gonna do some research, check it out. One of the AI ones that I've gotten kind of red pilled on was Tau. People have been, talking about the BitTensor network, and so that could be an interesting one for people to look into. But we don't have enough time on today's call to go too deep into it. I got enough time
We'll have
for
to do it for the next one.
the next one, exactly. Yeah, we got plenty in the backlog. But kind of the last thing I wanted to ask you've just always got a knack to be like really early on trends. Like you called DePIN well before it was even a category, with DeFi before it was even defined as DeFi. Like you were already in it with AI agents. Like what's kind of that next one out there that maybe the market's not really appreciating right now that you think maybe deserves like a small portion of speculative capital that could grow into a larger portion?
Yeah, so I guess I'll just double down on two things that I've kind of already said, but explain why it's
Sure.
early. So one within DeFi, kind of this C DeFi crossover, where you marry off-chain demand for capital with on-chain capital lending and capital sources, to be able to lower the cost of capital and expand into more traditional markets to expand that opportunity set. So like, let me give a concrete example. At its peak in 2022, the centralized lending in crypto was a $35 billion market. Now it's about 15. It's growing quickly. But the problem with that market back then is with Genesis and Celsius
There's a lot of fraud.
and BlockFi, it wasn't necessarily
FTX.
some of it was fraud, but it was mostly poor risk management, because what they did is they lent out money with no collateral. And they said, like, okay, if you'll pay us 15% interest, you don't need to give collateral. And then
Fucking
what ended
idiots.
up happening is 3AC blew up, and Luna blew up, and all these things blew up. And then the counterparty is like, sorry, we can't pay you back. And they lost all this money. So, like, in that context, at least, under collateralized lending did not work. Now, as it's coming back, and obviously the fraud stuff is bad, but putting that aside, that's one of the major reasons why it blew up. But now we've had this shift to collateralized lending, but there's even more demand than there was last cycle, even though the size of the market right now is half. So it's not just funds, over-the-counter trading desks, market makers that are demanding this kind of have this borrow demand, but also now it's these digital asset treasury vehicles that are looking to borrow against the Bitcoin that they've already purchased or the ETH that they've already purchased to accelerate the pace at which they can buy. And then a lot of other kind of interesting use cases. So, like paying out to miners, kind of helping fund capital costs of businesses. So I think this intersection and what, this ties in with Maple specifically, because this is what they're going after. They've created a dollar denominated yield, dollar kind of stable coin that yields and is generating like 6.5% APY that then feeds the capital demand off chain. But the interesting thing about the composability of DeFi is you can take that asset, put it in Pendle, and split it into a principal token and a yield token. You can loop it, so put leverage on it, and you can get 30 to 50% APY on stable coins. So now you're meeting the demand off chain with this really, really low cost of capital source, but also can earn a lot of money for the participants. So I think that market's going to expand enormously. Another example of CDeFi is so like off chain demand and on chain execution or like on chain rails is Aerodrome. I'm really bullish on the growth that we'll see from Base. And what they're doing is they're shifting their users to be able to do more and more activity directly from their app on chain without even thinking about it. So Coinbase, instead of having to list a new token, you can trade through their app directly on a DEX where a token's listed immediately. And it doesn't need to go through CoinFund's, more arduous processes. Or say you want to borrow against your Bitcoin on Coinbase, you can source that borrow from Morpho on chain. And I think that's going to just drive an explosion of activity for those sorts of applications, Aerodrome being one that, I'm particularly excited about. So that's one category. And then the other is
I just want to pause there just real quick because those are three names that I've got exposure to: Morpho, Aerodrome, and Syrup. Those are some great picks, and I love that. Like, even though those are in our world right now, I mean, those are still some hot things. But you're saying like we're early on those still because the roadmap is still so big.
Like Syrup, for example, it's doing 20 million of ARR. It's trading about a $50 million, sorry, $550 million market cap. That's 27x multiple. That's like more or less the average S&P multiple for a company, for a protocol that's done 4x growth in the last quarter.
That's crazy.
And then the other side of thing is we've seen a lot of innovation in kind of advanced trading apps and infrastructure. So things like Axiom, Trojan, Bullex, Photon, DEX Screener, none of these have tokens. None of these monetize and give value back, or they monetize, but they don't give you value back to the community. Moby is an example of a project that's doing that. I think we'll see more of that. So that's one of the reasons that I'm bullish on them in that category. Also, of course, almost all of the things that I've mentioned are assets that the fund owns because, if I'm excited about it, the fund shouldn't own it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be excited or vice versa.
Exactly.
So, caveat on kind of the things that I've said today. But those are two categories. Bringing token level incentivization and value return to trading infrastructure, and then the CDeFi combination.
Beautiful. I've got one last question on Syrup, and just kind of like I'm not really sure how to pair it, but the whole Genius Act saying that you can't have yield-bearing stable coins. How does that kind of come to bear on Maple and like the Syrup token?
I think how I at least interpret the Genius Act is like there's stable coins for payments and there's stable coins for like yield-bearing investment. So like think about it, like a treasury is not a stable coin, but it's how you look to save money. Or you don't really think about saving money in your Venmo account, or maybe you do. I guess depending on
Right.
what yield they
But you're
offer.
getting no yield in your Venmo
Yeah,
account.
but that's essentially how I think about it. Like these are two discrete categories.
Okay, that makes sense.
And maybe these get different names over time, but the way I look at it is Syrup is a dot on the lending side, the Syrup USDC product. It's a dollar denominated savings account, essentially. Not an account, but a dollar denominated savings asset. So whether you think of it as a stable coin by that exact terminology or not, it serves a different purpose than I think what the Genius Act is going after. However, with more clarity around stablecoin regulation overall, I think that brings a ton more capital on chain. And when that capital is on chain and it's not being used for payments, it's going to want to earn yield. And I think that's a really big opportunity.
Love it. Austin, we could talk all day, man. We are at the top of the hour. I want to ask you where people can kind of follow along with your journey. Are you big on X, Substack, and any websites?
Yeah, so post most of my thoughts on X. So it's just at Austin Barak, just my name there. And you know, if you have any questions or want to jam on anything, I try and read through as many of my DMs as I can. So you know, feel free to shoot me a message, and you know, always happy to kind of get a new perspective and you know, learn something new.
Amazing. Austin, thank you so much for being so generous with your time today. And everybody at home watching, I hope you enjoyed. Stay tuned.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.